Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, welcome. I was having a few little glitches here and there, but we're on up and running. The two mics are here. Welcome to Clobbering Time, issue number 633. Hey, two mics. Saints Bears look back at 2007 and look forward to playoffs of the 2018 variety. Well, 2017 season, 2018 the year. Be picky, whatever. We're not picky.
Yeah, we get it.
We'll get it there. Thank you. Hey, bro, have a good holidays there?
I sure did. I cannot complain about any aspect of it. How about you? How were things down there in Baton Rouge?
Good, man. I mean, you know, again, to friends of ours who aren't fans of sports teams, who incidentally, in some ways, we kind of envy them in some level because of all the pain that brings it. But for friends who are not, my geek friends who don't get the whole sports thing, this time of year, when it comes to postseason, when you're not in it, it's melancholy and it sucks and it's kind of crappy. And since football season coincides with the holidays, that the big Christmas and New Year's holidays at times of the year, if you are a fan of a team and you do get there, you have high hopes. It just elevates it to a whole new level for yourself. I mean, Christmas is nowhere near ending yet. I mean, mine ends Sunday. But it didn't yet. Christmas and New Year's extend into another week. And if we get what we want Sunday, it's going to extend into another week after that. And if we win four, if you know what I mean, it will extend into Mardi Gras.
Right. It'll just keep going, keep rolling.
Christmas, as it did one year before in my life, will extend well into mid-February. So, and by the way, incidentally, years that we're not there, I still, it's not the same, not really, but I still love watching. I love the playoff season so much that the Super Bowl Sunday is always a special, like kind of a holiday type thing to me personally. I enjoy it. Even when it's not my team, I get a certain, and of course it's very relaxing when it's not your team in one respect, because you're like, hey, well, just want to see a good game. If you lose, whoever loses or wins, it's not your problem. But It feels really great, and I'm pumped up, dude. So yeah, Christmas is still strolling along, and until at least Sunday, at around somewhere close to the 6 o'clock, the 6:30 range, Central Standard Time. So we'll know if we're going to get a little bit more Christmas.
Right.
But anyway, before we talk any more about that, it's been a while since we've been here, everyone, as you all know, because, you know, again, holidays and that kind of stuff. So, again, I've been missing it because we always have a good time talking football and stuff like that, but, you know, just other things interrupting, all that kind of stuff. So, basically, we're going to get with Mike here and talk a little bit about his Bears, the way things kind of ended up for you guys and what you're sort of looking forward to in the future. Sorry it went the way it did, brother, for sure, but I want you to know that I did not pick the Browns over them.
Well, so. You know, I think that was probably a smart decision. I mean, even if you're just playing the odds on that one.
How about them Browns? We should give them a shout-out, too. I mean, they've achieved footmore, almost. It was footmore immortality. Now they've joined one other team in that. Whoa, 0-18.
Yes, the vaunted 0-16 club.
You know, they should probably give you a first seed in the playoffs for making that.
You know, I mean, if you're going to go through the trouble of losing all your games, you should get some sort of consolation prize.
Let's advocate for that at the next owners meeting because we know we're invited.
Well, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I'd have to look this up, but I thought I heard somewhere that Hugh Jackson had said that if they did go winless, he'd like go jump in the lake.
He said if we only won one game, he would jump in Lake Erie.
Oh, okay. So not if they went completely defeated.
He said if we go 1-15 again, which they did last year, can you imagine? 2 years.
Yeah.
He would jump in Lake Erie. So I don't know how he's going to handle it now. But he did not get fired.
Well, yeah, it's pretty amazing. I guess the new personnel regime said, well, the previous guys were so awful that he just did the best he could with what he had. And, you know, and I can see that point of view, and constantly turning over coaches has not worked for various football teams, as we well know. So I guess it's just a matter of, you know, just because you have a bad record doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that you're going to get canned. You have to have, like, extenuating, or you have to factor in all the circumstances, I guess, is what I'm getting around to.
I would say that if you got a guy who's been there and he goes 1-15, I forgot what his record was the year before, but it was not very good.
No.
But you got a guy, I don't know how long he was there even, to come to think of it, but if you got a guy that goes 1-15 and he follows it up at 0-16, and they don't fire him, I almost really admire that and respect that. They're not one of the better front offices in football. Let's face it. They're terrible. But I almost admire the Colonies on that because the guy is a good coach. He is a smart man. And, it's, you know, maybe they're looking at it like, look, the guy got fired from the Raiders, another garbage organization. Maybe they weren't given old Hugh much of a chance because the guy is well-liked. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Amongst players, he's a player's kind of coach. Maybe they said, look, maybe a lot of these core players, and we bring some more people in, maybe this guy, if he's going to keep fighting like that and never give up, and still, every game he's out there busting his ass, all those players that just don't have a lot of talent, you know what? What if we stick with the guy? Unless you got somebody of a phenomenal who's out there, yeah, you go after them. That's one thing. But you go, look, I mean, is anything any more than a lateral move at this point? Yeah, if he stinks it up one more year, you know, and you don't fire him, you're probably foolish. This is a big – if they're going to stick with this and keep him this, you know, for the job, and I think they are, I almost give them credit for that. Like, look, hey, stick with the guy. See what he could – see if he can turn around. See if these players can be inspired – excuse me. Why me? I don't know. Inspired to play for a guy who can go 1-15 and go 0-16 and keep humping it and not quit. So you never know. There might be something good in that. I would like to see them turn it around after this.
Yeah, I mean, as AFC teams go, that I mostly don't follow or necessarily care about.
Right.
I think the Browns, in their division particularly, I'd like to see them get to where they're competitive again for sure. And sure, to see somebody other than say than the Steelers win the division for a change. I mean, absolutely. It's let me see, the Steelers, Ravens, Bengals, and Browns. So yeah, I'd have no heartburn if the Browns supplanted any of the others there to become fixtures at the top of that division.
Yeah.
Not the least of which, because the Browns have been, you know, such a factory of sadness for so long that, you know, they are basically soul killers for your average fan. And if they could turn that around and become a competitive franchise, I think a lot of people would take heart in that. Just, if nothing else, to show you that you can go from, you know, the depths of despair, you know, and go from being really down and out to finally getting some kind of success. You know, it would be kind of a feel-good story, to say the very least.
I will root for them.
Yeah.
Now, a team that's, of course, not in that quite the same quite desperate situation, but they have fired their coach, there, of course, will be your Bears.
Yes, they did.
We hadn't been on in a while, so talk just a little bit about what went on the past couple of weeks and what you're looking at now with them going forward.
We did have the satisfaction of a triumphant victory over the Cleveland Browns, the
mm-hmm.
same Cleveland Browns we've been discussing. And, you know, that afforded us, our fifth win of the season, as I recall, and our final win of the season. We went defeated in our own division, losing to the Packers and the Lions and the Vikings twice apiece. But on the plus side, we did defeat every team in the same AFC North division that we are discussing.
Wow.
We beat the Steelers, we beat the Ravens, we beat the Bengals, and we beat the Browns. So we are the AFC North champions, baby.
Wow.
It's kind of tragic that we got hammered by virtually everybody else you can think of, but we did win. You know, we have that to hang our hats on. So, you know, no one from the AFC North nor their fans can give us crap, because we can just point back and say, oh yeah, and you
yep.
know, get into
there
one of the, kind of get into one of those kind of intellectual debates of I know you are, but what am I? I know you are, but what am I? You know, that kind of thing.
And so is your face.
Yeah, so, yeah.
What'd so you is your say? Face, man.
Right.
Yo, Obama.
You got a stinky butt. Yeah.
Just the way we.
Sorry. Man. Didn't mean to give you a coughing fit there.
You didn't. I did. Thank you, buddy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But
dealing with it here.
Yeah.
Oh,
but,
so sorry, everyone.
Oh, that's
God, it's the time of season.
Oh yeah, yeah. I had to suffer through a freaking cold myself for a couple of weeks ago, and it was just one of those kinds of things where, you know, unlike a flu that'll come and go in a day or two or three, colds last 7 to 10 days in varying states of misery. So, you know, even when you're mostly over it, you're still not feeling well, you know, and it's just like god awful. But it, like you said, it's that time of year.
Well,
but,
mine hasn't really. It's been kind of a weird one. Just lots of. I don't know if I have one. You ever have? I don't know if you have a cold. You don't feel bad or anything. Just cough every now and then. Like,
well, you know, sometimes that's a cold, and sometimes that's just say either a respiratory infection or it's just a response to the weather. You know,
yeah,
one way or the other, it's kind of,
right.
You know, in terms of like, you know, if it's not a cold, you can still get all kinds of crud, you know, that affects
right.
your lungs and your respiration, hence
yep.
the post-nasal drip that causes the cough and causes the crappy feeling
yep.
in your chest and stuff. So, you know.
Oh, well, you're right, buddy, but.
It's always good to have some cough medicine and some analgesics on tap and that sort of thing. But anyway, as far as the Bears are concerned, all I can say is that you can make a very strong case that, you know, you know, a lot of Bears fans are feeling optimistic, if nothing else, because we're not losing with washed-up vets. You know, we were playing a lot of young guys. They didn't seem to give up at any stage. Our quarterback made visible progress. So we have hope for the future, particularly if they get the coaching part of the equation right. We're pretty satisfied with what the GM, Ryan Pace, who came from your organization, the Saints, we're pretty satisfied with what he's done so far, and he seems to be growing into the job. He's identified some good free agents. He's overpaid some, but that seems to be par for the course in today's NFL. But, you know, he has made some good draft picks. He has picked up some decent free agents, and in a couple of cases, I really, really hope we go get on the stick and extend some of these guys. But you know, even though it was a 5-win season, and that's not much of an improvement from a 3-win season, and we wound up firing the coach, I think that we have a lot to look forward to just in terms of, you know, developing talent. And, you know, that's the name of the game in today's NFL. It is really, really hard to run out and make a bunch of splashy free agent signings and expect your team to really succeed on the basis of that. That just doesn't seem to work in today's NFL. You know, that much we have optimism about. And so now the head coaching search is underway. And that's the big, the big story in Chicago. And so, I'll just run down some of the candidates that we know about and that they've talked to, many that they haven't had a chance to talk to yet, but they have talked to a number of them. And depending on who you ask, a lot of people say, well, the Bears aren't a desirable destination for a hot head coaching prospect. But I'd really beg to differ. They've got the young quarterback in place, and a lot of teams or a lot of coaching candidates like to see that. You know, they like to see somebody that they can come in and develop who isn't going to come in and be resistant to, like, whatever offense they're going to put in. And they also see a lot of young talent on both offense and defense. So it's not like they're coming into a case where they've got to blow everything up. I guess that's the big thing. They're not going to be presiding over a rebuild. The rebuild is actually what killed John Fox. He was a good guy to lead it. Unfortunately, he wasn't a good guy to win a lot of games during it. And so I guess that's why he was let go. I mean, I was never passionately in the fire John Fox or you know, like the web browser, fire Fox campaign. Coaches, you know, really get too much credit when a team wins and too little credit when they lose. There are only a couple of coaches in the league I can think of, and one is named Belichick, who seems to be able to wring wins out of teams that may not be stacked with talent, you know?
Right.
And everybody else, it's really dependent on how well their personnel department does. And Fox was brought in, make no mistake about it, to preside over a rebuilding franchise. And unfortunately, you know, things didn't turn around. They really had to do a deep one. I mean, a lot of teams, they can jettison a few guys here and there and pick up a few guys, and suddenly they're right back in it. But this was never going to be one of those situations. They just really had to let a lot of guys go. Some of them had been around as long ago as the 2006 Super Bowl run. It was just one of those cases where they had to rejigger a lot about the team. And one of the big moves, and I think that this might have even saved Fox if they had gone ahead and committed to this sooner, if they had just gotten rid of Jay Cutler sooner, I think they would have been much further along, because they kept him for a year and a couple of backups. They didn't have a guy that they were going to be able to groom to be the next quarterback. And unfortunately, as a result, it slowed their progress. And I hang, of course, a lot of that on the previous personnel guy, Phil Emery, who had signed Jay Cutler inexplicably. I mean, I think, you know, at least half the fan base was wondering why he did this. But Jay Cutler had, and this is the weird thing, they were having one of their so-so seasons under Mark Trestman, and Cutler, as per usual, he gets injured a lot, and he had gotten injured during that season, and Josh McCown, the mighty Josh McCown, had come in and actually looked good, and this is what frustrates me. Josh McCown, who nobody expected anything out of, had come in to, you know, to run the offense, and was doing a good job of it. It was actually looking like a pro-style offense, and they were competitive. They even won some games, but they never, ever once gave some thought toward, well, you know, let's see where McCown takes us. No, they were just hopelessly committed to Cutler. So Cutler recovers from his injury and comes back into the lineup. And even though, okay, they go into Cleveland, for some reason this just seems to be orbiting Cleveland here, our NFL show. It's weird. So the team goes into Cleveland and has a come-from-behind victory, and they've started Cutler, who is back from his injury. And Cutler, sure enough, he throws three picks, but he also throws three touchdowns and shows what Phil Emery believed to be resilience in this comeback win against the Browns. Okay, I just want to emphasize that. I can't emphasize that enough. Against the Browns. And so he, on the basis basically of that game, he's like, okay, we're going to give Jay Cutler this fat contract extension, pay him like one of the upper echelon starting quarterbacks in the league. And that, I guess he was thinking, will be the final piece that makes Cutler kind of clean up his act a little bit and perform consistently the way he could if he had the right combination of brain and arm. But he's never had the right combination of brain and arm. That's the difficult reality of it. That's why he is your classic. The term is coach killer. And Cutler is a coach killer if ever there was one. Michael Vick was another example of a coach killer. He had all the arm talent you could ask for. He had athleticism. He was, in spots, he was a good quarterback. But unfortunately, he was just not a complete quarterback. And that's where Jay Cutler lies. He is just never going to be that guy who can go through a full field of reads, throw with touch or anticipation, hit routes where a guy is, you know, hasn't even come out of his break yet, and you've already thrown the ball out so that he can, you know, turn and hold out his hands and the ball's in him like the great quarterbacks can, or at least the very good quarterbacks can. And that's just the problem with Cutler. And why people who are close to a problem like that can't see that and sometimes make the wrong determination about that, I don't know. I mean, we've all been too close to a problem and not been able to see, you know, the solution before. I mean, that's just human nature. But when you're in a situation year after year around the same guy and he makes the same mistakes, and you not only keep him, but you double down by giving him this rich contract extension, it just boggles my mind, honestly. But, you know, the bottom line is that the only way the regime was finally going to move on was if they got rid of Cutler. And I wish that had been Pace's first move. When he came in, when he replaced Emery and John Fox replaced Mark Trestman, I wish that their first move had been to just go ahead and part ways that offseason, take the cap hit, and release Jay Cutler. But they figured, well, we've got him under contract one more year. We've got a lot of holes to fill, so he'll just kind of be our placeholder. And it was the worst thing they could have done. I mean, you never know. If they had released Jay Cutler and, yeah, not won as many games, maybe lost a couple more, and been in position to draft, say, Carson Wentz or Jared Goff, you know, one of those guys, then where would we be now, maybe? It just makes you wonder, because you would have a quarterback who has a couple years of development as opposed to just kind of finishing up one. And it would have been great if they'd been able to kind of see that they were not going to be able to complete the rebuild by hanging on to a quarterback they knew they were going to cut anyway the following year for one more season. So that's what really kind of kills me. But whatever the case, that's no longer a problem. An NFL head coach coming to Chicago is not going to have to deal with an enigmatic quarterback who can look great in stretches and then completely just botch things, throwing into coverages that no sane quarterback should throw into, you know, or throwing a ball that, even if it's not a double or a triple covered receiver, still gets intercepted. You know, he's not going to be coming into a situation like that. And that's, you know, a very positive sign. And nor is he coming into a situation where they haven't drafted their quarterback of the future yet. I mean, this, in my opinion, is optimal from a standpoint of someone who wants to develop a quarterback with a lot of potential, with a young team, with, especially good depth on defense. And, you know, the main thing that they need is wide receivers. They need some guys who can catch the ball. And, you know, this offseason, particularly free agents, you know, there are going to be some good guys available, and the Bears should be competitive because they've got a lot of cap space, which is another thing that should make the position appealing, is that, you know, they're going to have room under the cap to sign some guys. So all in all, I would say that, you know, this is going to be I don't know how you would qualify what the best situation or what the worst situation is as far as being a head coaching candidate, but for them or anybody to say that the Bears are not an appealing destination, I mean, not only are they going to have all those positive factors, but, you know, for God's sake, this is one of the cornerstone franchises of the NFL. You know, this is not some podunk outfit. This is an actual, you know, legacy franchise. And yep. So I think that alone should be enough to, you know, be at least reasonably appealing. Then when you factor in all the other stuff, I you know, this is not just me as a homer talking here. This is someone, you know, who's considering all the various factors.
Sure.
And I do believe that the Chicago Bears ought to be near the top of any sane candidate's list. But the only other factor I can think of that might apply, and this is not unique in the NFL by any stretch, is that some head coaches, when they come in, they expect personnel authority. And, right. You know, they're not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them do. And the biggest names might push back on that. Like, for example, yet again, Josh McDaniels is on a lot of people's head coaching list, and the Bears are supposed to interview him, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, in his last spot with Denver, he did have that expectation of having personnel authority. And, you know, it led, of course, in, you know, talk about irony of ironies.
Mm-hmm. Tebow!
Led to Jay Cutler getting let go from the Broncos, traded for a couple
right.
of first round picks plus for Cutler, and that kind of, you know, in retrospect, obviously, if you had it to do all over again, you wouldn't do it, but that has had repercussions, to say the least. But that was what he expected there. Didn't work out for him in Denver, so I hope he's not still insisting on that. But
yeah.
But at any rate, I don't know which of them are going to expect that and which aren't. But the main list of names that I have seen thus far starts with somebody that's already on the Bears coaching staff, which is Vic Fangio.
Okay.
He is a very good defensive coordinator.
Yes. Yeah.
He has done very good work with the Bears, and it would be good from a continuity standpoint, because he knows the organization already. He's got a scheme in place and the personnel to match the scheme. I don't know if they just gave him a courtesy interview or if they're really considering him, but I would not be heartburn. I would have no heartburn at all if they went ahead and decided to keep him, because then, you know, you're getting new staff under him anyway, especially on the offensive side. Our offensive coordinator, who bears a curious resemblance to a cross between Patton Oswalt and Seth MacFarlane, weirdly. As a matter of fact, this is kind of funny.
Weird.
Somebody tweeted this out, that Dowell Loggins looks like exactly that, you know, a kind of like a genetic combination of Seth and Patton. And Patton Oswalt responded, you know, come on now, we're all we're very proud of Sefton. And so, you know, that was just amusing that he bothered to respond to that at all. But, yeah, he's moved on to Miami. He's going to be Adam Gase's offensive coordinator down there. And and Gase's present offensive coordinator is going to have other duties, moved into a different position, as they say, when they don't want to fire you, but they don't want to keep you in the current job. You know? I think, if I'm not mistaken, Gase calls his own plays anyway, so Loggins would probably just be one of those figurehead offensive coordinators. But, yeah, he's going to reunite with Gase down in Miami. So, you know, there's going to be a new offensive coordinator, and there were a number of appealing candidates there, too. So if they did give it to Fangio, it's not like the offense would take some enormous step back, because it, you know, really it needed a more seasoned figure there, plus somebody who was guaranteed to be good at developing a quarterback and who can bring in the people to develop a quarterback.
Isn't Fangio pretty old, though?
Fangio is 60. So I believe he is 60, so he's not one of those guys who's been around since, you know, the some of these guys, I swear, like, who was the guy that the Colts had that was I don't know if he's still there or not, but like defensive guy. I mean, he was in his 80s. He'd been around since, you know, days of Bud Grant and the Steelers coach for the longest time.
You mean the guy who was Peyton Manning's, the 8-year-old, was it Arnold or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, he was with Merchant Broda. He was so old.
Broda. There you go. Yes, yes.
No, he was that old.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he was, and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, I can't remember a time in the NFL when he wasn't, you know, part of it in some way.
They've been around a long time. Dick LeBeau's still in the game.
I'm sorry?
Well, you got Fangio. I mean, he's not quite as old as Dick LeBeau, but you got still LeBeau types. You got Wade Phillips.
Yep.
I was thinking maybe – look, Fangio, I like that one. That kind of reminds me of a Mike Zimmer type thing, and he's doing very well.
Yeah, speaking of which, you know, you've got Zimmer up in Minnesota doing really well, right?
Yep.
Well, you'll notice. Remember how at the beginning of the season when the Vikings when Bradford went down because he just wasn't quite well? And so they had to go to the mighty Case Keenum.
Yes.
And that kind of became a running joke for a while until it wasn't a joke.
They don't joke now.
Yes. That was a pretty amazing thing. And it just so happens that one of the guys that they're interviewing, he's next on the list I was going to talk about, Pat Shurmur, the Vikings offensive coordinator.
Okay.
And it makes all the sense in the world to interview this guy because, number one, you know, he turned a journeyman backup quarterback into a legit starter. And they went 13-3. They weren't just a defensive team, which is what you would think. Well, you know, our starter's gone down. If we make the playoffs, it'll just only be because our defense kept us in games. They were offensively potent all year long and finished with 13-3. And I would argue that they're probably the favorites now, given that Carson Wentz got hurt and Nick Foles came in, and Foles is – you know, so-so at best at this point. So Pat Shurmur is also coming in for an interview. And, of course, they've got a little more time with a couple of these guys because they've got the bye week, you know.
Right.
But I'd put the Vikings right now as potentially the favorites, other than the Saints, of course, in the NFC for the Super Bowl.
Well, we're about to move on to the playoffs in a second. So we're gonna. By the way, we'll pick the playoffs also.
Yeah, I was just gonna add that you know, Shurmur would also be, you know, basically you'd be getting somebody with intimate knowledge of one of your chief division rivals. So there are a lot of upsides to bring in a guy like that, and so, you know, he's definitely a strong candidate. Eagles quarterback coach John DeFilippo. Who worked with Carson Wentz, is on the docket. I'm kind of surprised they didn't also ask to interview Frank Reich, who was the Philly offensive coordinator as well. But DeFilippo is considered to have done some really good work with Carson Wentz. And, of course,
right.
It shows because Wentz is kicking ass before he got hurt.
Sure.
And So, you know, they're going to talk to him. Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy. Nagy might not have been considered if the setup in Kansas City had stayed the same, where Andy Reid was still calling the plays on offense.
Yeah.
But they, when their offense stalled, they turned to Nagy to call plays, and suddenly they found an offense again. So people were impressed with that. So they got him on the radar. I mentioned Josh McDaniels, and of
mm-hmm.
course, every year the New England offense is one of the best in the league. So, you know, I think that's a no-brainer. If you can get somebody like that, you at least inquire.
Right.
And the two defensive guys, which is, you know, a little surprising given that, you know, they're so offensive focused right now. But defensive coordinator George Edwards of the Vikings and Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator Steve Wilks. And those are two of your top defenses in the league. Some are saying that, you know, that's to satisfy the Rooney Rule. But
yeah.
At the same time, if they have good names in mind for the offensive side of the ball, there's no reason why they can't be taken seriously and should be taken seriously for the job. Because, when you know, it's not like you're bringing in a couple of nobody defensive coordinators. I mean, these are two of the best defenses in the league. And I have no doubt that they could adapt the personnel they've got. Even if they run a 4-3 and the Bears have shifted to a 3-4, they'll figure out how to make it work. You know, these are top defensive minds. And, you know, the Bears are identified as being a defensive team usually. So if they were seriously bringing those guys in, that'd be fine with me. So anyway, those are the top prospects. And, you know, the interviews will develop over the next week or so, and I have a feeling that they'll be making their selection. I'm guessing probably early mid next week, because by then they'll have interviewed everybody, weighed everybody, and then once they've made their decision, they'll be able to work out contract terms, introduce them at the press conference, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, sure. Well, I wonder if, because again, I like the ideas of Michael Fangio and some of these other guys you've been mentioning. I'm wondering if there will be you know, this is a copycat league and it's a trendy league, if you will.
I wonder if
we're going to start seeing things like the Sean McDermott combo with they take this young kid, 32 years old. Yes, dude, that's a kid now. My God, that's a
yeah,
kid.
Yeah, I know.
To both of us, that's a child.
Yeah.
And but they pair him up with a great, you know, old timer, like Wade Phillips.
Right.
I wonder if we might see a little bit of that again, people trying to go after some youngsters. If they can get, again, obviously, I think Fangio is head coaching material, and a couple other guys are too, Sherman and a lot of those guys. But I'm wondering now if we're going to see any teams kind of go that way and say, you know, you get the youngster in there, but you got some, you know, if he's going to be the head coach, you bring in some big time either offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator that's been around a long time. And, you know, I wonder if we can get, you know, if you'll see some of that.
You know, that would not surprise me. Now, none of the names on the Bears list are especially young. The only one that I think is, well, probably the two youngest, well, it depends. Now that I say that, I don't know exactly how old DeFilippo is or Matt Nagy. I'm sure I could look it up, but
I'm not 32 though.
yeah, exactly. But I suspect they're fairly young, and Josh McDaniels is not old. So you know, there are three reasonably young names, and two of them are probably pretty young now that I think about it. In fact, Nagy, I'm pretty sure, is early 30s, like McDermott, that kind of thing. And the other guys are, you know, more seasoned. But a lot of people are liking that approach now, and given the success the Rams in particular have had, I think that that might become the next trend. And one of the reasons I think people will start considering that more seriously is I read a very good article not long ago about how, and it was related to the Bears coaching search, actually, how too many teams are just kind of they're going after the same retreads, you know. They're going, and we've seen that time and again, where they'll go after somebody who may not have had much success in his last stint as a head coach, but he went back and he became a coordinator again. Well, maybe he's ready this time. I think somebody like Norv Turner is a big example of that kind, that kind of thing. Wade Phillips has kicked ass as a coordinator and never done a thing as a head coach, you know?
Right.
There are guys like that who keep coming and going. And the trend toward hiring young guys seems to be an effort to shake out of that mindset. And given that, like you say, it's a copycat league, but one of the things that seems to happen is that you get too set in your ways, and not only do you hire guys who haven't had success before, but you get guys who are averse to change. And, you know, that was
–
if there's anyone knock like on John Fox that I think applies, is he was always, like an old head coach would be, averse to playing younger players. If he had a veteran option, he would go to that veteran guy every time. And sometimes you need a guy who's going to come in and think differently, because the league does change and adapt, and – just as certain offenses and defenses come and go, you need somebody who can anticipate that and adjust for that, and do so maybe in a way that an older coach, a more entrenched coach, might not do it. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. It'll be interesting to see if some of these teams, because there are six teams in search of a head coach. It'll be interesting to see if they do that very thing and go after some young, fresh minds, as it were.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. By the way, shout out to Matthew, our good buddy Matt Fisher, popped in there. I don't know if he's still there, but he did pop in to say hello there. So
well,
good to see you there, bro.
He's still there. He's at the very least represented in the chat room. He may have wandered off into the other room and said, "I wish they'd talk about hockey."
Well, you know, we talk some hockey on this show, but I got to have the hockey man to do it. So,
well, that's it.
You know, and we are going to do that. I think I might do a few. Who knows? I might do a few Go Pens specials when they make their run, their serious run at a three-peat.
Three-peat,
and I'll be there. Three-peat. Before we get into the playoffs, I guess since we've covered the Bears a little bit, let's cover what's been going on with the Saints ending this season on a. You know, Sunday's game, man, really aggravates me. But look, we haven't been on for a couple of weeks. Before that, we had a really nice – I mean, again, don't get me wrong, could have played a lot better. But anytime you take out those dirty birds at home, it feels good. So
sure.
We've been kind of – after the big long streak of the eight games the eight-game streak there where we, you know, made NFL history being the first team coming off of an 0-2 to win eight straight or whatever it was – We've been a little bit up and down, a little bit inconsistent, dropping a couple games here and there. It's tough to win all the time, of course, no matter who you are. But I haven't lost in a lot of confidence or anything like that. We've had a lot of horrible injuries. I was thinking they might not make the playoffs. Oh, man, I don't know, buddy. But I'll be rooting for you. Sorry about that, man. Damn. He said they might not make the way things are going. But, hey, they got time. I hope they have time. That's what I know, right? You know, Mike, are you there?
Yes.
Sometimes I can't tell because of the things, right?
Yeah.
All things said about this 11-5 regular season, it's been a lot of fun. Again, like I said, it's tough to win for long, big streaks of time. So anytime you rip off an eight-game chunk, it's huge. Then you start dropping a little bit here and there, but we've just some horrible injuries. Not an excuse, but you know they've had some bad injuries along their offensive line and especially on defense. But the way this team has changed from a team with one player carrying the rest of them,
right?
One guy standing out, and he still threw for over 4,000 yards, and that's considered nothing for him,
right?
But Drew Brees is still Drew Brees. He just doesn't have to be when you finally – how many of us have been saying this for years? As fun as it is to see him do what he has done with those numbers, those unbelievably gaudy numbers.
But you know what it is, man. You want to know why he only threw for 4,000 yards. It's because, and I don't know if you noticed this or not, but anytime either that Kamara guy or that Ingram guy was in the backfield, Drew would be dropping back. He would take the snap from under center, and one of them would grab the ball away from him and run with it.
Yeah, he was trying to throw it.
What's up with that?
I mean, love those guys.
I mean, and if they would have, I'm sure they would have benched him right away if they didn't have a habit of getting, you know, good yardage whenever they did that. But I'm sure that Drew was sitting there going, "What are you doing?"
I think it shows that he's ready. And
yes.
He realizes it's something we've been talking. How many times have we come off saying, "Look, that's all great and all, but here you are throwing for 5,000 yards, and other than one or two times, you're not really making the playoffs very often."
Right.
Because you got to have the whole. It's just, I don't care if it's
balance.
Cliche. You got to have the balance. Nevertheless, it's kind of. He was still, even when you're a team with no defense, he would keep you alive by scoring a lot of points.
Sure.
So he got to the 70,000-yard mark, one of only three players to do it, and he did it faster than Favre Manning did. I mean, it's incredible. But he's still that guy. And he realizes he wants, before it's over, he's 38. He wants it. It's about to be 39. He wants a world championship again because no one's Tom Brady. No one's going to have their whole hands filled with him. So when you're a guy not playing for a Belichick monster, you take whatever championship you can get in the NFL. You're not that blessed. So
right.
He's realized that, and they all finally realized something. I don't know if they realized that. It can't be that they didn't know it.
Right.
Maybe just some things had to go their way. But I'll tell you, everyone talks about, rightly so, this wonderful two-headed monster that we have in Alvin Kamara, which was one of the greatest Saints draft picks. Third round, dude.
Yeah.
That I've ever seen. And Mark Ingram in this running game, we actually don't even have a tight end right now. We have one great wide receiver in Michael Thomas, and we have suspect wide receivers everywhere else. But the reason why we are where we are has been this defense.
Right.
This running game is fantastic, don't get me wrong, but this defense is stopping people, and it's kind of funny. They're doing it like the classic no-name defenses of old.
Right.
In fact, with a lot of injuries, and you don't sit there. You know, when you watch this team, if you sat there and watched all 16 games, you watch them all, you'd almost come out like a lot of people like, yeah, he still breathes, but he didn't have to do it. That running game, wow, that's amazing. And you talk about that two-headed monster running game, and you talk about how Breeze doesn't have to. And then you start thinking, wait a minute. These guys are allowing 13 points and 14 points and 16 points and 10 points. And four. In other words, this defense is against the Falcons, they made three amazing goal line stands against in a game where, again, the offense did not put a lot of points. And, you know, even by the way, we lost a couple of, you know, we're hurting on the offensive line. So the running game, as great as Kamara is, and he's making some great plays, our running game isn't quite as effective right now in the past couple of games than it had been earlier in the season because, you know, Andres Pete and, you know, we lost, who's it, Werther? I hope Werther's coming back. But, so again, we've had some trouble running the football, and plus everyone's expecting you to run the football now if you're the Saints. So people are preparing for 41. And this is great when you got a guy like that that is scaring the shit out of defensive coordinators. It's just amazing. But this defense, yes, led by, in my opinion, if he's not the defensive player of the year, Cameron Jordan, I don't know who is. And I'm willing to listen to anybody. And you might name somebody and go, oh, yeah, maybe he is. But this son of a bitch is a beast. Cameron Jordan is an absolute – he is a hurricane of destruction on defenses. And I've never seen him – I haven't seen a Saints defensive lineman have a season like this maybe ever.
Right.
Linebackers, we all know of the classic salad days, the Dome Patrol. You know, the Dome Patrol or even back to our Super Bowl year when we had, you know, we had Will Smith and Charles Grant, two good defensive linemen.
Right.
But really, we also had Vilma in the secondary and Fujita and Jabari Greer and even the scumbag Sharper. So this defense doesn't have any of those kind of big names other than Jordan. And no one's even talking about Jordan. And finally, he may finally make a Pro Bowl. He's only deserved it for the past 4 years.
Right.
But this defense is quietly taking teams out. And I've really, really just going, yeah, if they keep playing like that. And again, you can say, well, in Tampa, they kind of didn't do it that well. Yeah, in Tampa, they didn't. But again, it was a weird kind of game. And it was funny how it's a strange feeling, Michael, when you back into the playoffs. We didn't back in. We won the NFC championship.
Yeah.
Championship, but win him back in, but still, when you lose a game that would have maybe given us a shot at a third seed,
right.
And that would have changed anything anyway. We still would have had to play.
Yeah.
This week, we just would have been playing somebody different, probably.
But you'd still like to win that last game headed into the playoffs. Just have that little bit of extra momentum. I know totally what you're talking about.
Everybody was like, right after it was over, when I was watching it, everybody was going, okay, but we got it anyway, so fuck it. And they were trying to cheer themselves up. It took me a while to get over it. I was really aggravated because they had the game, and they kind of screwed it off. I thought they had a good chance to win it. Fuck Tampa. But, but that's just – now, what sucks, Michael, is now, here's the indignity of it all. As great as everything is, and as happy as I, of course, really, really am about being in the playoffs, and we have a team that's very capable of going deep, I have to fucking root for the goddamn Dirty Bird Atlanta Falcons for two times, man. Two times. And the scenario being, I don't know if you've thought about this, but if they do manage to go out and beat, there's a lot of ifs coming up, by the way, just so you know, if alert, if they do go out and beat the Rams, and we, of course, take care of business and beat Carolina,
right?
We will end up in Philly, and the Dirty Birds will end up in Minnesota.
Right.
They're quite capable of winning there, as good as Minnesota is, because I still believe my conspiracy theory that the NFL will not allow a Super Bowl to be played by home team, but even not only that, they're actually crazy enough to win up there. And if they win that one, we could host the NFC Championship game.
Right.
So I've got to root for the fucking Falcons twice this year? What are you guys doing to me?
Well, sometimes I think they set these things up in advance because they're like, what's going to aggravate Mike the most?
You got it, buddy. That's what I'm talking about. Well, guess what? I'm not going to give them the satisfaction. Fuck them. I'll wear me a Dirty Bird shirt.
There you go.
But I won't be saying fuck the Falcons as much.
Right.
Although, listen, 10 out of 10 scientists still agree with fuck the Falcons. Just saying. Scientific fact. But anyway, I wish them well. Dirty Birds, I kid. I want you guys, don't think about 28-3. Go out there and beat the Crams. They don't need to go any farther in the playoffs. They've had a nice year. Go and ruin it for them. And that brings us to the playoffs coming up. Playoffs coming up this weekend, Michael. We got a whole slate of wild card games. Wild card playoff game. Goodness, you can't beat it. Let's see here. By the way, what did you? I didn't pick week 16. I mean week 17. But did you? You don't know your numbers off the top of your head for weeks.
I've got my spreadsheet up and. I finished the season at 163-92.
And Larry, sir.
And the only problem I've got is that's actually one off of the total number of games played in the NFL, 16 games per week times 16, ultimately teams. Well, 16 games times 16 matchups. So basically over 16 times 16 should be the total number of games played total in a given season. And because even accounting for the bye week, there were only 16 weeks each team plays.
Yeah.
And so I'm one off, and so I'm either 164-92 in actuality or 163-93 because I left one out somewhere. But overall, hey, close enough.
You beat me by two touchdowns, dude.
What's that?
You beat me by two touchdowns. I'm 148-98.
Okay.
141-98. Excuse me.
Well, I wouldn't feel badly about that. I salute your boldness in your quest to kind of pick those upset specials. I mean, it was always interesting to see who you were going to go for this week that was, maybe not someone everybody would have picked. And you picked them. Doggone it.
Well, thank you, man. Yeah, I would. Excuse me. I did pick me some Browns, not all the time, but up at that last game, if I had been able to pick the 17, week 17, if I hadn't forgotten about it, I would have picked the Browns again. But that's neither here nor there. Let's talk some
right.
playoffs. Let's compete in their playoff picks now. All right. The early game Saturday, the Tennessee Tuxedos, a.k.a. Titans, at the Kansas City Chiefs.
My pick. It's going to be kind of a home-heavy week for me. And starting with this game, I like the Chiefs in Arrowhead. It's not that I don't think that the Titans aren't going to be a force going forward. Mariota is developing quite well. But I do like the Chiefs at home, and I do like the way that, since, like we talked about with the offensive coordinator, their offense picked up after they switched to Matt Nagy. And I think that the Chiefs are going to take this one.
I concur, sir. Titans, I think actually, you know what, I think the Titans are going to give them a little bit of trouble. They're a spunky football team. But on the road, that madhouse in Cleveland, in Kansas City, and those Kansas City fans are definitely desperate and hungry. They haven't won anything in forever. So I think they'll definitely get that team through over this wild card hump, and they will Randy Reid, can win in the playoffs. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs also. The late game, which will be Saturday night, the Atlanta Falcons, my wonderful, sweet and kind, lovely Atlanta Falcons, whom I just adore and always have, at the Cleveland, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Los Angeles Rams.
Well, I will say that I am, like you, I am hopeful that the Falcons win. I have a bit more affection for them, genuine affection, than you do. This week, you're just faking it. You're whispering sweet nothings, hoping that...
Oh, come on! Not me!
That's what I'm saying, man. But I at the same time, I think the Rams are very stout on defense, and their offense is good. I'm picking them to win at home, but again, I'm hopeful for not just your scenario, but because I kind of like the Falcons, that they'll win it. But I am picking the Rams.
Well, you're in Atlanta, and you have a lot of friends, I'm sure, that are Falcons fans.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually going to – and this is nothing to do. I'm telling you, this is nothing to do with anything other than I actually think the Falcons are going to win this one. The reason why I do is they've been so resilient. They'll get whacked around one week and not look great, and they'll win some games they don't look great in. Other times they'll look – better, and I think that the Rams have very, very, very little playoff, very few playoff savvy or playoff experienced players on their team, and we all know what kind of playoff experience the Falcons have. So I actually think the Dirty Birds. I definitely would not be surprised if the Rams pulled this one out, but I think the Rams have a serious shot to win this one. So I'll pick them, take a risk on them.
Oh, you said Rams. You mean the Falcons?
Falcons, yes. Sorry.
Yeah,
okay. So, yes, I will go with 30 bucks on that. That's not even hopeful because, if they get beat, it won't be the end of the world for us or anything.
Well, there's only one game difference between them in terms of win-loss records, and even though the Falcons' offense has been really spotty all season long, their defense has really kept them in it, and when you've got a defense, you've got a chance. So this is not a pick that, I'm concrete about by stretch. And like you say, the Falcons, though, do have the more recent playoff experience. So, it would not shock me at all. It's just that basically it's a matchup between two fairly close teams, and I'm taking the home team. That's about it.
Definitely understand. Early game Sunday, the Buffalo Bills at the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I want to give a special shout-out to – congratulations. By the way, anyone hearing this on the – on the stream, sorry about that. We're running late, but we'll still be recorded and in the when we finish. We're going to finish this up in a second. Sorry we took so long, but we'll still be recorded in the archive. But a big shout out and congrats to the poor old Buffalo Bills fans for their first appearance in the playoffs since 1999. So
yes,
Bills Jags.
Well, this is another case where I'm going to go with the home team because the Jaguars, in particular, sport a tough defense. And in the case of the Bills, they have a quarterback situation that can be charitably described as being in flux. So that is my, not necessarily my concrete expectation, because it's, you know, not like Jacksonville looks dominant, but they look pretty good. And so I'm picking the Jags. However, my just like with kind of like with the Falcons, I do hope that Buffalo wins, and not just because it's been so long since the Bills have been in the playoffs, but also because a good comic book friend of mine, comic artist that I collaborate with here and there, lives up there in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, oh, he's fairly cool. Excited about them being back in the playoffs for the first time. And
sure.
I'm there with him. I'm like, dude, I hope they get the win. And, you know, it can come down to either, you know, say between them and the Chiefs before it's all said and done to go to the Super Bowl. I think that'd just be swell. So,
yeah.
That's my pick is Jacksonville, but I hope Buffalo wins.
I'm going to agree with you absolutely with Jacksonville. Again, you know, they're at home and playing a very young team. Their defense is there. You got the legendary Blake Bortles, who will probably be could be giving his job up to Eli Manning next year, but who knows? And you know, LeSean McCoy is hurt, and he might not play at all. Excuse me, they don't know yet. Damn it.
Right.
But so, yeah, the nice job of the Bills getting there. I'm very, very happy for them and their fans. And hey, this is a pretty good team. So I like Tyrod Taylor, so you'll be back.
Yeah.
Who knows? You might. I'd like to see you pull off an upset right here. You're capable of doing it, so, but I will pick the Jags there. And of course, the late game, the Carolina Panthers at the New Orleans Saints.
Well, given that the Saints have home field, particularly the Dome, is going to be especially crazy, and not only are they playing a home game, but they're playing a home game against a hated division rival, this is going to be electric. I mean, I just really feel like this is going to be one of those games that the fans are just going to be especially intense. These are both two quality teams, and no other team in the NFC should take either of these squads lightly. I mean, you know, it's like you said, New Orleans has found balance. Carolina, when they are on, especially with Newton, when he is on, you know, they are tough to stop. So I think this, they rightly put this game as the late game on Sunday, because this is really the game of the week. And I'm picking New Orleans again because it's a home game. And, you know, all things being equal, I think home can be a major advantage, especially in the playoffs. So I'm thinking that this could be a real slugfest of a game, but I'm going to go with the Saints on this one.
Well, I might surprise you on this one, but I think I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers. Yeah, right.
Sure.
I mean, a homer like me.
Don't give me that crap.
Well, I will tell you this. If we were 8-8, backed into the playoffs and gotten all kind of help and didn't really look like we were a team that belonged there, and we were traveling in the wild card game to a 13 or 14 win Carolina team, I would pick the Panthers.
Sure.
But I really think, not just because we swept them this year, by the way, that's a myth that it's tough to beat the team a third time. It's really not true.
Right.
I've seen, especially when the Panthers came here last time, they looked like deer in the headlights a lot. They didn't look like they really wanted to be there. They didn't look confident. They didn't look comfortable. I mean, look at them. They'll go – this is a team that will go, what was it, 2 weeks ago and handle business with just 2 weeks ago, they looked tough. They looked like the old Panthers.
Yeah.
They took somebody out, and I forget who it was now. But you're thinking, wow, so they look like maybe they're really getting it together. Then they go to Atlanta and get beat.
Right.
So they're a very vulnerable team. They're very unsure of themselves team. So that makes them a very beatable team. Does it mean they can't come in here and win? Of course not. Anything can happen. We could lay a serious egg. You know, again, I'm always going to have that in the back of my mind because I'm a Saints fan. And, you know, you just get that way. But I got to give all the advantages to the Saints and the biggest one, again, all of them, and that home field in a playoff atmosphere is huge, electric, like you say. So
yes. I'm guessing your pal Michael Grady's going to be there.
Oh, yeah. Michael's going to be there. He's a season ticket holder.
There you go.
He will definitely be there. I got a lot of other people, a lot of buddies going to be there. very tempted to go my damn self, but I was not able to swing it. But I would love to. I'd love to be there. It's something. But I'll be there in spirit. Well, this weekend, I got to go. Lady Fred and I are going to go to New Orleans tomorrow night and stay there. They got this stupid Wizard Con coming there, but she wants to go to that. And okay, you know, so I've been promised to bring her that for a while. To that.
When is Wizard?
That's tomorrow and the next day. We're just going to stay overnight tomorrow night and then and go to Wizard for Saturday.
Right. Well,
walk around a little bit. Yeah.
Definitely.
You can, dude, you know I'd rather be home watching playoffs. But,
sure. Is our pal Larry going to be dressed up as Robin there?
I don't know if he's doing the Robin costume yet, but he is going to be dressed up there in some aspect. I know that. He's going to be dressed up for sure. So, yeah, we'll be around.
More power to him.
Yep. But yeah, so we got that going on, and of course, that means I'll be missing the Saturday games mostly, which is until I get home.
Right.
So that's a bummer and a half, but it's Sunday and by the way, don't think I was sweating my ass off there. Going, wait a minute. You know, about 2 weeks ago, I'm like, oh shit, we're not going to get a third or second seed. That means we're going to be playing wild card weekend, and I know it's going to be smack dab in the middle on a fucking Saturday. I was panicking my ass off, dude. And then after the game the other day, as soon as Fox announced it on Sunday, I'm like, oh, thank you. Game at that, even better.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I totally get it. I mean, if it were the Bears, it wouldn't matter what convention it was. I would have to be able to block out 3.5 hours of time, to 3.5, so that I could watch the damn game. I mean, that's just how it is.
I was ready to tell her, hey, you know, about that trip, I really don't feel good. I don't know what I was going to do. Or, hey, look, you can walk around the con, you know, for about 3 or 4 hours by yourself, huh? Or rock with Nicole. Another lady in front of mine is going to be there, Nicole. And, you know, she's another Wonder Woman. They're both Wonder Women. They're both dressed as Wonder Women. So they can hang out and look, you guys, and I'll just kind of sneak off. And,
right.
You know, 3 hours, we'll be back. Hey, you know, what the hell? I've been in this con. I don't care about these cons. Yeah, because I can't watch it on my NFL mobile phone because that app sucks. I mean, I pay $2 a month for that thing, and it's like 5 minutes behind most of the time.
Right.
Sucks. So.
Yeah.
And I watch the Red Zone channel on there, and it just eats it. And it's,
right.
It's so late on there. But anyway, buddy, I do appreciate this. The only logical day to do it is Thursday night. So if you're game for doing it for the rest until through the postseason, let me know. If not, no biggie. If you're busy, but if you are able to,
I am down. I mean, usually all I have to do is kind of bump some minor ambassador. Like tonight was Belgium. I just told them, look, we can have the waffles some other time. I got to do the show. So I'm totally good for doing it on Thursday playoffs. That's fine with me, man.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And well, everybody out there, thank you all for listening out there on the feeds and anyone else, whatever else you're doing out there. So remember, the secret is to bang the rocks together, guys.
I like to stand in water and bang two bricks together.
See, everyone, my laughing is its own punishment. all right, buddy. Well, as soon as I can find my damn outro music, it takes a while because this thing's going slow on me. Well, I appreciate it, my friend, and everyone.
Absolutely.
Look, hey, I wish any of your teams that aren't playing against mine all the luck. And I wish that my team will go all the way. Later, buddy.
All right, take care, man. Good talking to you, buddy.
All right.